my theme music. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. And I don't have a guest today, but stay tuned because some of you may be wanting to know more about sex therapy. And I've been doing sex therapy for over 30 years. And I'd like to send you to my website, which is drdianawiley.com. So drdianawiley.com. And you'll see my email address there. So as this program goes forward, I'd like for you to either call in. If you're listening live, you can call in to 888-874-4888. Or if you want to send me an email after the show, you can do that by going to my website, drdianawiley.com. So, lots of people want to know more about sex therapy. And some, although not too many these days, have some misconceptions. So what goes on in sex therapy? Talk, talk, talk. There's no touching, there's no watching, and sex therapy may involve giving information about the way your body and emotions work, perhaps giving permission to express your sexuality in ways that you're comfortable with, and developing communication with your partner about your likes and dislikes, needs and feelings. And this can often help couples with conflict resolution. I also help couples clarify the goals of their sexual interaction and their relationship and examine perhaps changing belief systems. You know, we have background in stuff, religious, family, political, and all of this might interfere with sexual pleasure and functioning. So there needs to be some then resolving old emotional wounds, either for you as an individual or for the relationship. So a sex therapist often helps people explore their past for clues that explain present behavior and assess the communication system, power balance, and the role of sex in the relationship. So that's sort of an overview. I often deal with sex problems, and if you go to my website, you'll even see areas of concern, which where I've written a page or two about typical areas of concern. So we've got sex problems. I often deal with erectile dysfunction, mismatched desire, lack of orgasm, premature ejaculation, and others. And then individual and relationship enhancement, sexual communication and negotiation, spicing up your sex life, and sometimes also going over sexual techniques. I was giving a marriage seminar and dealing with communication, and two of the participants, Tom and Grace, were listening to me as I said, "It is essential that husbands and wives know each other's likes and dislikes." And I addressed the man. "Can you name your wife's favorite flower?" So Tom leaned over, touched his wife's arm gently, and whispered, "It's Pillsbury, isn't it?" Oh, I'm sure the wife didn't want to hear that. But anyway, we've got to keep a sense of humor going. That's important. So I want to offer you, and please do call in, 888-874-4888. If you have a question directly for me, meantime, I'm going to cover typical areas of concerns and questions. So the most common question is, my husband wants more sex than I do. And how can we resolve these differences? Joan Rivers said some years ago, and by the way, I was on her show a couple different times when she had a nationally syndicated talk show in the early 90s, and she's really, you know, a really smart and nice lady, despite all of her cursing and everything else you might see. But she said some years ago, I haven't had sex in so long. Oh, I've forgotten who ties up who. So that was Joan Rivers kind of making a joke. But indeed, mismatched desire is the number one problem discussed in sex therapist's office. Because 1 in 3 married couples struggles with a gap in sexual desire. So in terms of causes, there's a medical explanation. There can be hormone imbalance or side effects of various meds. There can be stress, fatigue, depression, grief, even negative body image or unresolved issues from childhood, such as sexual abuse, and all of this can, of course, sap sexual desire. And then I have found, again, with my long years of doing couples counseling, there are other causes, including continuing arguments and feelings of anger between the spouses. So let's consider the spouse. If you're the spouse with the lower sex drive, and that's often the woman, not always, but it is often the woman. So so let's just stay with the woman. She is the low desire spouse. And guess what? She controls the sexual relationship because she determines the frequency of sex. And too often there is the unspoken expectation, I don't have to satisfy your sexual needs, but I expect you to remain faithful to our marriage. And this is, I believe, an unfair arrangement. Instead, I suggest to my clients, my couples with these issues, just do it. You know, there is a fair amount of research that suggests that for more than half the population, sexual desire doesn't just happen. Most have to be physically stimulated to feel desire. You need to have the arousal, and then, so arousal may precede the desire, and that is a surprise for some people. So, people who think they need to be in the mood to have sex might, in fact, need to have sex to get in the mood. How about that? And then I often suggest to the spouse or the partner with a lower sex drive, that they dispense with this checklist. Some low-desire spouses convince themselves that they can't enjoy sex unless a long list of conditions is met. You know, I've got to pay the bills, got to do all this stuff. And that does not help the marriage because I really believe that the marriage needs to be a priority. I also suggest to the spouse with a lower sex drive that she, mostly it's a she, sometimes a he, but as I said before, mostly a she, give your spouse a gift. Well, that's because in good marriages, people give their spouses what they want, even if they don't always want the same thing. Yeah. Doesn't that make sense? I also suggest they find solutions to unresolved problems. If relationship issues, such as anger or hurt feelings or personal issues, such as depression or poor body image, are interfering with your desire for sexual intimacy, well, even though I have a bias about this, professional help may be necessary and may help. I've certainly seen lots of my clients over the years, and it's very satisfying for me as a mental health professional to see them grow and prosper and have better sex. And then I also suggest that the spouse with a lower sex drive schedule a complete physical examination, because it's really important to rule out medical issues. And there, for instance, if the man is the one with the lower sex drive, and often there's a little more shame attached to that because it's culturally expected that the woman might have lower drive, but not the man. And so he needs to get a blood test and see where his levels of testosterone are. And there may be some other problems. Maybe he's got diabetes. But anyway, needs to have, and the woman too, of course, a medical examination. If I get a new couple presenting with sexual issues, I always suggest if they have not been to an MD or a naturopath that they go ahead and get that. So, what about if you're the spouse with a higher desire? Well, spouses with greater sex drive often respond to sexual rejection because they'll tell me, oh, I'm just so tired of being rejected, rejected, rejected. So then they often withdraw emotionally, or they develop a short fuse. And both reactions tend to push the lower desire spouse away further. So here's what I suggest in sex therapy for the spouse with a higher desire, that he, because it's usually a he, search for non-sexual triggers that arouse your spouse. Because many highly sex spouses, you know, they'll try sex toys or X-rated videos or lingerie. But honestly, people with low desire frequently feel more turned on by gestures of love outside the bedroom. So you need to ask yourself, what has my spouse been asking or complaining about? Let me repeat that. What has my spouse been asking or complaining about? Do some self-reflection and then make an effort to satisfy that request. Because being responsive to your spouse's need, well, you know what? That's foreplay. That's emotional foreplay. And lots of women, because they're governed, we're all governed by our brain about sexuality, but especially women, they need that emotional foreplay, including perhaps compliments, as in, make love to me in my ear. Tell me the sweet words. Which leads me to the second point about if you're the spouse with a higher desire, talk about your feelings. Because sharing feelings can be difficult, especially for men. But when you truly allow yourself to be vulnerable, your spouse is more likely to feel sympathetic. And that's the truth. I also want to suggest that you steer clear of common turnoffs. Don't blame. Boy, does this occur a lot. It's a couple's problem. So that every touch, hug, kiss does not have to be sexual. And so often, the couples that I see where they haven't been having sex, they also have not been having affection and demonstrativeness. I also suggest to the spouse with a higher desire that he not confuse denial of sex with intent to punish. Because when a spouse continually refuses a mate sexual advances, it's pretty easy to perceive it as a punishment or a personal rejection. And actually, that's unlikely to be the case. Again, it can help if you talk to your mate, to your significant other. And it's also important to understand the ebb and the flow of testosterone, because early morning is higher for men, sometimes as much as 14 times higher, and that can be one reason why men often want sex in the morning. But evening for women and mid to late in the menstrual cycle, it kind of levels in postmenopausal women and is more constant through the day. But so, again, check in with your mate to see when she might be experiencing more sexual desire. And I do say, spend more time together, because non-sexual time together without the kids can turn on a low drive spouse. Yes, especially women with small children, and so they have a date night, they go out, she has a bit of a break, she can get more in touch with what's going on for her. And so that's a little bit of an overview on mismatched desire, which is, again, the most common presenting problem with sex therapists. And I want to point out to those of you listening that some people are always ready for sex because they're starved, absolutely starved for touching or affection. And sex is the only way they can get either one. Sex is also used as a way of getting, for some, non-sexual rewards, such as a sense of power, belonging, or general validation. So, if a woman is withholding sex from her mate, he's much more likely to go out. And as Zsa Gabor said, some of your younger listeners won't have a clue as to who I'm talking about, but she's still alive and well into her 90s, but she said, men are like fires. They go out if they're not attended. And there is, of course, truth to this. So let's talk about sexual medicine, because some people ask, what is sexual medicine? We've got testosterone therapy for men and for women. I worked at the UCLA Female Sexual Medicine Center when I lived in Los Angeles, and so that's 10 years ago plus, yeah. And I did see transformations in women who were given some testosterone. And, of course, this can really help men, too. But first, you have to get a blood test and find out where your testosterone levels are. And also, hormone replacement therapy or bioidentical hormone replacement therapy. So that would be BHRT. So I've been on BHRT for a number of years, and it's made a huge difference for me. And it includes for me testosterone replacement. So women produce testosterone in their adrenal glands and ovaries. And around the time of menopause, that amount produced declines. And this may lead to, a bunch of problems like loss of desire, as well as fatigue and sometimes thinning hair. So hormones, and I want to put this very simply, are messengers that relay communication between the brain and the body. So the lovely warm feelings you get from a lover's touch is generated by the brain. It's felt in the body, and it's delivered in part by hormones. So what is true is that estrogen replacement for postmenopausal women has been shown to restore sensation levels to premenopausal levels. And it can even help with a more intense orgasm. And it's associated with lubrication as well. So some women will go to doctors, and the doctors are rather dismissive. And, you know, men have Viagra-enhanced performance. But women don't have that drug, at least not yet. And so a woman will go to her doctor, and she might require bioidentical hormone replacement therapy. But the doctor says, just have a glass of wine and relax. So you have to advocate for yourself and demand better solutions. And I think it's also important that the woman find out if her doctor has experience treating sexual dysfunction. No pill or hormone can help a woman if she hates her partner, however. Got to keep that in mind. Because women and their relationships are so, so important in terms of her sexual response. So with my clients, I found that a woman with these complaints might require BHRT, a weekend retreat, or a sex toy, or some combination of the three. Yes. Now, there are, of course, for men, as I alluded to, plenty of ED medications. There are, so we've got Viagra, of course, and Cialis, including daily Cialis, which is a very safe drug. It promotes blood flow in the penis, and production of nitric oxide. So, yes, these ED medications are useful. And they do work, and as I said, they're safe. I'm going to tell you a little joke because we always like to laugh as we go along when we're talking about sex. So a man is in a hotel lobby, and he wants to ask the clerk a question. And as he turns to go to the front desk, he accidentally bumps into a woman beside him. And as he does, his elbow goes into her breast. They are both quite startled. The man turns to her and says, "Ma'am, if your heart is as soft as your breast, I know you'll forgive me." And she replies, "If your penis is as hard as your elbow, I'm in room 436. So, yes, women do like hard penises, but of course, sex does not equal intercourse. And there are these medications, Viagra, Cialis, Levitra. There's also a penile injection, Cavraget, and it's a very fine gauge needle. There are vacuum erection devices. And then as a final kind of intervention, there's the penile implant surgery, which can be very good. Now, for the woman, we have topical vaginal therapy, which is, of course, required a prescription. Hormone replacement therapy, also blood tests, and then a doctor or a naturopath giving you a prescription. Using lubricants can help. Masturbation can help a lot. Self-stimulation. There was a Dr. Saz, and he said famously some years ago, "Masturbation is the primary sexual activity of mankind. In the 19th century, it was a disease. In the 20th and 21st century, it's a cure." If a woman who is menopausal or perimenopausal and doesn't have a partner, I often suggest that she masturbate with a dildo because she needs to do her Kegels onto the dildo in her vagina. And this will keep those vaginal walls supple and exercised. Very, very important for a woman so that she can actually use it, continue to use it, and not lose it. So it is important to continue to be sexual even if you don't have a partner. When we come back from the break, well, I'm going to talk about body image because this interferes so much, especially for women, with letting go sexually. I'm going to talk to you about the most common homework assignment that I give to my couples, which is Sensate Focus homework. I'm going to also talk about sex toys and toygasms, as well as the spiritual dimensions of sexuality and the health benefits, because there are many. And if you want to call with a question, please do. The number is 888-874-4888. I'd be so glad to speak with you on the air, and let's do it. But I'll continue on. This is unique for me. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. We're going to go to the break now. Well, I'm back, and I often hear, "I have a terrible body image." This is almost always from a woman, and it interferes with my letting go sexually? Of course it does. Negative body image seems to be common, but it is really not healthy. A poor body image often accompanies low self-esteem. I'm reflecting back and being honest with myself that in my 20s, oh boy, this was a long time ago, a man, a lover, might compliment me on my body, and I think to myself, oh, but doesn't he see my thighs? At that time, I wasn't able to see my body as it was, as others might see it, as a unique shape embodying my individuality. I believed I had to change my body before I could love it. And by the way, my chubby thighs helped me greatly with childbirth. I had a daughter and a son, so I was well formed for that. But also now I believe that if we can learn to see and feel ourselves really regardless of our weight as sensuous and graceful, well, it can even help to shed pounds. And so this is exactly the opposite of the old belief that you have to love your body before you can change it. What I sometimes call self-image neurosis is often a way to avoid being sexual. This can be an excuse not to abandon yourself to another. Because when a woman becomes fixated on the girth of her thighs or the tilt of her breasts or the width of her hips, in fact, she may lose her sensitivity to her partner and become unable to communicate that she cares for him. So such a preoccupation with one's own anatomy may represent a hampering and self-defeating form of sexual narcissism. Sexual narcissism. Because a primary way you're able to enjoy sex is to what? Is to focus on pleasure. If you're distracted by the worry that your partner won't find you attractive, you won't respond. And furthermore, it's likely that a partner who senses that you're fidgety and not really involved may lose interest. Most men are turned on to a woman who feels her sexual power, a woman who is enthusiastic. And there really are, listeners, plenty of women who are far from gorgeous and not the perfect weight, and they can often project sensuality and self-confidence despite their so-called imperfections. There really are lots of women who are not beautiful who feel very sexy and therefore can be very exciting in bed. So what to do about poor body image? I would suggest that you cultivate the ability to appreciate your uniqueness. Because when you start to appreciate your imperfections as endearing distinctions, you will have begun to love yourself in a way that allows you really to love others. And really, in order to love another, it's important to respect his choice of you as a worthy lover. That is a very important point. Your partner has chosen you. You're a worthy lover. So then this can give you a kind of self-respect And it may be easier to forget your precise physical boundaries. Oh, in the warm, sensual, sexual world that two people can make together can be so delicious. So that's what I have to say about body image, except I had one witty older guy declare, as a young man, I used to have four supple members and one stiff one. Now I have four stiff and one supple. Oh, dear. But acceptance of body changes, and that's pretty important. And I quoted a client saying that, but I'm also going to quote Marlene Dietrich. She said, the average man is more interested in a woman who is interested in him than he is interested in a woman with beautiful legs. Of course, she had beautiful legs, but she was a wise woman. So as you're aging, you need to make allowances. Even if you're in great shape, your bodies are different now. And maybe even your stamina, another important reason to exercise. So I'm talking today because I've been a sex therapist for 30 years. And so I don't have a guest, so I'm just talking to you, my listeners. So happy to do it. And any feedback you might want to give me, you can go to my website, drdianawiley.com, and the email address is there, diana@drdianawiley.com, and you can give me some feedback. I'd appreciate it. Or if you have a question, if you didn't want to call on the air, because so far we don't have any questions on the air, you can email me and ask a question, and I'm very happy to do my best to answer it. Okay, so we're going to talk about Sensate Focus Homework, because Sensate Focus Homework is the more common homework assignment I give my couples. So initially, these exercises are done without leading to intercourse, and this often alleviates the stress and pressure couples may feel with performance anxiety related to intercourse. So Sensate Focus exercises consist of, and I give them a handout on this so that they understand it. It's planned, it's methodic, these are home tasks, and they're aimed at exploration of each other's bodies through touching, stroking, caressing in ways that are mutually gratifying. And I instruct my clients to remember that they're not responsible for their mate's satisfaction. So I also say, you know, take turns being the giver and the receiver of pleasure. So it's basically an erotic massage, and taking turns, and there's a little more to it, because it was first, Masters and Johnson came up with this Sensate Focus Homework, and They also invented the term Sensate Focus. And they said these exercises are designed to help people really experience touching and arousal instead of thinking, watching, and judging their bodies and performances. They also provide a convenient laboratory, really, for people to see how they respond to change. So this I've had couples come back after they do the Sensate Focus homework, and they're thrilled. Because if the guy has premature ejaculation and has performance anxiety anyway, he's relieved often that intercourse is not allowed the first couple of weeks. Meantime, the couple can get in touch with all the other possible sensual delights that there can be. I mean, our bodies, from the top of our heads to the tip of our toes, we have all these erotic possibilities. And honestly, listeners, too many people get stuck between the legs. Let's explore other possibilities with touch. I often get the couples to start with face, hands, and feet. Just that. Touching your lover's face. That's very intimate, really. And the hands and the feet have all kinds of nerve endings in them. So we want to do that. So let's talk a little bit about sex toys. Sex toys. I sometimes call it toygasms. Toygasms. Because sex toys can facilitate orgasm. And so I've had a question from a male client about why does my woman and women in general enjoy vibrators so much? And I'm thinking about a sex therapist who was a real pioneer, Lonnie Barback. She said, if most couples made love by rubbing the testicles against the clitoris, women would climax most of the time and men would have trouble. Indeed. So unlike hands or mouths, vibrators don't get tired, don't desire communication, don't need to be in the mood, and also don't request reciprocation. They're almost perfect. But here's the point about sex toys. They cannot replace human beings. They can't kiss. They can't make you laugh. And they can't warm your feet. So vibrators can really help, especially women with orgasm. And what I'd like to suggest is an attitude check for men, because sex toys are not your competition. They are not. They facilitate, for many women, an orgasm, and that's great. And then she'll be even, you know, the payoff is there, because she's even more wanting sex because she has an orgasm, you know, and that's like a high that's otherwise impossible. It's just the most amazing kind of high. So I think that when couples can bring even a small sex toy, I really like the Jolie, which is Candida Royale's natural contours sex toy, found at royale.com, royale.com, the Jolie, J-O-L-I-E. That can be used during intercourse. The woman or the man can put it on her clitoris, and it can help her reach orgasm. It's small enough. And so That's a very nice kind of sex toy with all kinds of benefits. And there are others. We-vibe.com also has the salsa, which is red, and the touch, which is blue. And these go in about six different frequencies, from hard and fast to pulsating. And so there are lots of websites that where you can explore around, including bettersex.com. And also on bettersex.com, you'll find Great Sex for a Lifetime. I helped narrate this sex education video in two volumes. It's for baby boomers, but it really is for all ages. It's already won some awards. So Great Sex for a Lifetime is a very good sex education video. And, you know, we can learn so much visually, so that's important. And they do have a segment on sex toys as well. So, sex toys. So let's go from sex toys to another question that I get, and that is, are the spiritual dimensions of sexuality important? Yes, they are important. Sexuality has a miraculous potential that most of us never touch. There is an Indian mystic, Sri Rajneesh, and I'm going to quote him now. He says, 99% of people know sex only as a relief. They don't know its orgasmic quality. They are not living. They are not having true orgasm, just genital release. True orgasm is a state where your body is no longer felt as matter. It vibrates like energy, like electricity, end quote. So, when we are experiencing this state of vibration, it really is a marvelous chance for self-exploration, and it can bring extraordinary richness to the relationship. And also it can allow people to experience the perfection of their bodies. And most importantly, in my view, and lucky me, I've experienced this profoundly, it is deeply healing, especially for people, and I don't have this part, but many of my clients do. People whose self-image has been poisoned by shame-based teachings about sexuality, and that can include some religious teachings. So, indeed, sex can provide deep, momentary pleasure, and it can also nourish the soul and the body. So I want to end this program with talking about the health benefits of good sex, because there are so many. Sex relieves stress. It can lower your blood pressure. You get hugs and that sort of thing. Helps the blood pressure come down. It can lower depression, touch, oxytocin. And, of course, oxytocin, well, the more we're touched, the more we want to be touched. It can boost immunity. Really, it's been studied. It can burn calories, sex. Oh, 30 minutes of sex, even not such vigorous sex, can burn 85 calories. If it's more vigorous, more. And sex improves cardiovascular health. There was a study done in Wales, about 1999, but it followed these men for 10 years. So the men that had sex two times a week had half the fatal heart attacks compared to sex less than one time a month when they did the follow-up. So this gave new meaning to the man saying to his mate, "Honey, I'll just die if we don't have sex." So sex also boosts self-esteem, because if sex is loving and connected and what you want, then you get more health. And sex can also decrease anxiety and hostility, because a good sex life is often equals less blaming and fewer arguments. In fact, some studies have shown that couples that have more frequent sex have fewer arguments, and when they have arguments, they get over them faster. Sex improves intimacy, especially as we age. Well, maybe at any age. But when you're sexual, you have interest and confidence. And that's pretty much the same thing as optimism and vigor. So it's very good for successful aging. And then oxytocin is linked with feelings of generosity. Furthermore, going on with health benefits of good sex, sex reduces pain. That's because of oxytocin and endorphins. And my colleague, Beverly Whipple, has demonstrated this some years ago in the labs at Rutgers University. Sex reduces prostate cancer risk. So if a man is in his 20s, 5 or more ejaculations weekly, it seems that later his risk is cut by 1/3. So it's a good thing. And masturbation even counts for these ejaculations. So I think it's, you know, my bias is it's better if you have sex with a partner. And sex also strengthens pelvic floor muscles. So you've got to do your Kegels, ladies and men. And this can reduce incontinence. Yes. Sex helps you sleep better, because oxytocin promotes sleep. And sex, here is a great one, may help you look younger. There were 3,500 people interviewed about their sex lives. And the panel guessed the ages. And men who had sex 3 times a week looked an average of 12 years younger, and women too. So sex produces lean muscle and can decrease body fat. So one of my favorite, not original, of course, but use it or lose it. Have sex more often and live longer. That's it. And remember, my dear listeners, that sex does not equal intercourse. There are all these other things you can do. Physical intimacy increases emotional intimacy. And take time to set the scene. And there are lots of health strategies for better sex. Physical exercise, Kegel exercises, the PC muscles, anti-inflammatory medication, like Aleve 20 minutes before sexual activity, and erotic and healing massage. Yes, thigasms. Pleasure is really important, and nothing ages like happiness. I say that often. I'll close with a quote from my 91-year-old mother, who says, "The older you get, the better you get." Well, unless you're a banana. Okay. So thank you for listening, and I look forward to the next program where I'll have a guest. And I count your blessings, everybody, and I hope you have a sexual partner. And if you don't, I hope your search for one is healthy, and active. Goodbye, everybody. Cosa leggerà?